When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the FF Faceoff, where fantasy football is debated. Here are your hosts from the East Coast, who've never heard a bet they didn't like, Michael Hoff and Anthony Servino.
Well, Wednesday afternoon, and everybody knows what that means. It's the real NFL guru, Anthony Servino of the FF Faceoff, joined by at Jim Coventry NFL from RotoWire, and we are going to have a power hour today as we go through the last three teams of the NFC South. But before we begin, Anthony Servino, tell everybody how you're doing today.
I'm doing great, guys. Really happy to be here and to start getting through some more of these teams because football season is right around the corner, literally. And I feel like, yesterday was June 1st, obviously. Today's June 2nd. And that reminds me of all these post-June 1 contract designations we're about to see. It's almost like another small run of free agency. And that's if we get lucky as media guys and have something to talk about.
Yes, and as you and everybody else knows, we're waiting to see what happens with Julio Jones because the June 1st date was pivotal in terms of the ability to spread his cap hit over two seasons. The Aaron Rodgers talk, it seems that Gutekunst is digging his heels in. He's actually clearing cap space, meaning he is making a plan to keep Rodgers, but we'll have to see what Rodgers. We talk about those guys every week, but as you said, Anthony, we're very excited to see if there's any news coming down the wire. As of today, June 2nd, not so much, but hopefully soon. Anthony, we are going to start out today with the Carolina Panthers. It's an interesting team. They were completely rebuilding defensively. Last year, 2020, all of their draft picks were on the defensive side of the football. And they had good play at the defensive tackle, 63rd percentile. These numbers come from Sports Info Solutions. And they had good safety play, 73rd percentile. But they really struggled at cornerback, 5th percentile play. That was very problematic. The edge rush, 50th percentile. Brian Burns was emerging. They had other players coming along. But really, their inability to hold up against the pass was very, very problematic for them. And what I thought was interesting was that even though teams could move the ball through the air on them, and we'll go all over the place on this, but Carolina Panthers games only gave us the 6th fewest total plays per game. So as much as we think, it was they always played in slow-paced games. But let's get this started out right here. Will the defense make many improvements this year? They do have Brian Burns on the defensive end, good edge rush. Derek Brown, a high draft pick at defensive tackle. They brought in some linebackers. They have Perry, Denzel Perryman, Jermaine Carter, Shaq Thompson. They drafted J.C. Horn at corner. So what are your thoughts? A.J. Bouye came in. So what are your thoughts about the defense this year after being a very poor performing unit last year?
I mean, I think they have a shot to improve, but they were so poor last year. It's not going to happen overnight. I think just like with any defense that adds all this new personnel, it's going to take a good 4 to 8 games before we see this team really gel. And I like A.J. Bouye. He was part of that Jaguars team that made the run going into they almost made a Super Bowl run with him. He's been a journeyman since, a little bit banged up. I know he had a suspension here and there. But A.J. Bouye is still a quality cornerback, and he's really going to help this secondary out.
Absolutely. Now, if J.C. Horn comes in and he's the real deal from day one, we potentially have a team. Dante Jackson's in the mix, too. There's potentially a team that can cover. And as you mentioned earlier, I mean, they bring in Hassan Reddick at defensive end. Not great, but he brings some juice as well. And between he, Burns, and Gross Matos, who also could bring a little bit of heat on the pass rush, Derek Brown can collapse a pocket. This defense, like you said, not going to be built overnight, but there are potential pieces in place where they could make an exponential leap this year. We're not going to bank on it, but it's not a tiny percentage of possibility. So now that we understand the defense is probably not going to be bottom of the barrel, it should be competitive, hopefully better, but competitive at least. We get to what everybody wants to hear about, the offensive side of the ball. So skill position-wise, we fortunately get back Christian McCaffrey after what was a lost season. Other than that, at receiver, we return Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore, but in come David Moore in free agency. More important, Terrace Marshall in the draft, and Sam Darnold at quarterback. I think the first question everybody wants to know, what can we expect from Sam Darnold now that he's gone from the death grip of Adam Gase?
I mean, everybody wants to put it on Adam Gase, and that's fair. And then you want to point to, well, look what Ryan Tannehill has done. Ryan Tannehill and Sam Darnold aren't the same case, because we already saw a good season out of Ryan Tannehill. We've seen that he can play football before. I know there was that injury year in Miami where he was taking them into the playoffs, or maybe they made it to the playoffs, and I think maybe Matt Moore got the start, but we knew Ryan Tannehill can play a little bit. I'm still not very convinced that Sam Darnold can play any better than a Teddy Bridgewater.
So that's a good starting point for us. I think the first difference that we probably all can agree on, Darnold probably doesn't have the accuracy that Bridgewater has. However, Darnold at least potentially has a much bigger arm. The question becomes, last year to Joe Brady, he had Bridgewater as his quarterback. He had to play in a way that maximizes quarterback, and we saw a lot of short passing. We saw, obviously, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, they were getting tons of short passes. DJ Moore was seeing a little more downfield action. We'll talk about those guys in a minute. Hopefully, depending on the camp that Darnold has, if he shows at least decently, I would imagine the offense gets opened up a little bit. Now, remember, Darnold does have familiarity with Robbie Anderson. They connected very well on deep routes from the days in New York. So that said, Sam Darnold in two quarterback leagues, is he a third quarterback for you going in, or is he a borderline lower end quarterback too?
Right now, he's a third quarterback going in, because I have so many question marks. And maybe it's a little bit of recency bias. Last year, a lot of people, not me, I was not in on Teddy Bridgewater, but a lot of people thought Teddy Bridgewater was going to pop in this offense with these weapons. And yeah, he popped for one more touchdown than he had previously in his career, going from 14 to 15. And I like to say that all the time, because it's the truth. And what he did do was he allowed Curtis Samuel, Robbie Anderson, and DJ Moore to all total over 1,000 yards. So, yes, the yardage production is going to be there, but are the touchdowns going to be there? In the red zone especially, are they going to trust Sam Darnold to throw the football, or are they going to give it to Christian McCaffrey, because this is a guy we know that could score 18 times in a single season?
And that is going to be a big dilemma for fantasy managers as they make their preparations this season, because the understanding of how much passing is going to be used. Now, last year, the Panthers were 15th in pass rate. They passed 57.5% of the time. So, and they ran the seventh fewest offensive plays in the league at 62 per game. So it was a moderate paced offense to slow, and they were not pass heavy. They were pass neutral. And that was with most of the season without Christian McCaffrey. As you mentioned, McCaffrey coming back in. Well, maybe that pass rate goes even a little bit lower. Protect your quarterback. Use your greatest weapon in McCaffrey. So that said, Darnold will at least have weapons. DJ Moore, in my opinion, forget fantasy for a minute. I believe that DJ Moore is an elite NFL receiver. I believe he is a top 10 receiver based on talent alone. No, he's smallish at 5'11", 215, but he's always had dynamic speed scores, explosiveness, and his agility is outstanding as well. And he is a player that has yet to show what he has for the fantasy community because of poor quarterback play and coaches who misused him. So if Darnold has the coaching staff, move DJ Moore exclusively to the slot. Remember the damage that Darnold did with Jamison Crowder in the slot. Mm-hmm. What would happen for that duo if we saw DJ Moore move to the slot?
I mean, that could be something big, because I like Jamison Crowder. He's a nice football player, but he's not the caliber of talent that DJ Moore is. DJ Moore brings so much more athleticism and speed to the football field, where he can take a lot of those plays to the house. And I'm not discounting what we saw from Crowder last year, who I think opened the year with three or four 100-plus yard football games.
Yes, and when you look back to even DJ Moore playing with Teddy Bridgewater, he still puts up 1,193 yards in 15 games. Only four touchdowns. And we know that tends to be a problem. We'll talk about that in a bit as well. Now, the problem that I had with the Panthers last year was the coaching staff had familiarity with Robbie Anderson from the college days. And Robbie Anderson, in his early NFL years, he was a very good deep threat. Yet, the Panthers coaching staff was running him on the short routes, DJ Moore on the deeper routes. They completely misappropriated their personnel. They gave them the opposite roles of what they should do. Now, toward the end of the season, the script flipped a little bit, and especially with the targets, DJ Moore began to see elevated targets down the stretch. Hopefully, that's a precursor of what we'll see this year. I don't know that this matters with the coaching staff, but it would be something they should note, the downfield chemistry that was very apparent between Darnold and Anderson in the New York Jets days. If they could reenact that, and as we said, use DJ Moore more on underneath routes, more in the slot, what could happen with this offense? Because we've seen, as we said, we've seen Anderson connect with Darnold. What would happen if they utilize the players properly?
If they use these players properly, I think we're going to see a whole different offense, because if you get Christian McCaffrey going, that's going to open up a lot of those deep balls and a lot of that chemistry you're talking about with Robbie Anderson. That's going to free up the middle of the field for DJ Moore to go on his catch and runs. And all of a sudden, these receivers like DJ Moore, who has never had more than four touchdowns in a single season, he has the potential to double his touchdown total with Sam Darnold if the personnel is utilized properly.
So that is going to be the big question. Now, we only have three preseason games this year, and we don't even know how much the regulars are going to play. And there may be no litmus test going in. So fantasy managers will be taking a leap of faith on what the coaching staff could do. The player who's intriguing to me is going to be the rookie they drafted, Terrace Marshall. I had Marshall as a highly touted player coming in. I loved his measurables coming in. He's one of the few receivers in this entire class that actually has size to be counted on as an outside receiver. And also, and you'll help me with this, I believe there's a college connection at some point with Terrace Marshall and the coaching staff, and I forgot to look that up before I got on the show. Nonetheless, let's just bounce that out for a minute. Even so, if Marshall is projected to be the outside receiver, that does give us what we want, a DJ Moore in three receiver sets kick to the inside. Marshall, again, we don't know what we're getting from Darnold. So fantasy managers can look at Marshall as a sleeper, but you're betting on Darnold as much as you're betting on Terrace Marshall. So it better be a late pick you're using on Marshall. And that's assuming he beats out David Moore. But my guess is with the draft capital and the athletic profile, it should not be a big hurdle for Marshall to be on the field early.
Is there a shot for Marshall to hurdle Robbie Anderson, given the connection that's there? Because I've heard people say that. I just don't know how much I buy into it because of that pre-existing rapport. And Marshall, yes, some draft analysts had him as a first-round pick. I just don't see it. Yes, maybe the three, but to leapfrog Robbie Anderson, a player with a pre-existing rapport with Sam Darnold, I just don't see it unless Terrace Marshall was a megastar.
Right. And what I meant was that he would hop David Moore.
Yes. No. I get, I'm just saying other people have said that they could see Marshall starting in two wide sets over Robbie Anderson.
Yeah. And had they not used, and I'm with you on that. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to back up your point a little bit here. The way the coaching staff used Robbie Anderson, they brought him in. So it's very clear. And I believe it was Temple. Is that where they went to school? But that there was that connection from there. Yeah. And you're so right. They brought him in for a purpose. They were not disappointed at what he gave them last year. So like you said, familiarity with the system. He did what they needed him to do. And as you said, so that I wouldn't buy that other noise that Robbie Anderson gets beaten out right now. Now, 2 years down the road, another story possibly, because I still think at the end of the day, Robbie Anderson profiles in the NFL as a situational deep threat. He's a string bean. He's not going to take any physical punishment, but he's very good downfield. But completely agree for this year. Yeah, we definitely have to pencil in Robbie Anderson as the starter. But again, in deeper leagues, consider Terrace Marshall as a late pick. If Sam Darnold does project to be okay or a decent quarterback, Marshall could surprise and do some damage. And if there's an injury, he could move into a big role. Now, we haven't talked about Christian McCaffrey, but before we do, offensive line play last year, we got to mention this. They were at the 32nd percentile they played. Their offensive line had a lot of injuries last year, but when we look through, it's basically a bunch of retreads. Cam Irving at left tackle, he spent some time in Dallas. Pat Elflein at left guard, he spent some time in Minnesota. Matt Paradise at center, he spent some time in Denver. John Miller at right guard, he's a holdover, and he was on the injury list a lot. And from what I saw, I was not overly impressed. And then Taylor Moton, he had played with them last year. Overall, I think at best, this line maybe goes to 50th percentile. But before we talk about McCaffrey, and you want to add on this a little bit as well, I think the coaching staff did a nice job masking the line. They got the ball out quickly to mitigate the struggles there. And I think at least having three veterans from the center to the left, at least if they're going to run a quick strike offense, I think they can be good enough to perform that kind of offense. Any thoughts on the line play?
They need to take a huge step up, and one of the bigger head scratchers last offseason was why they traded away Trey Turner. They got back Okung, who he's not even part of the team anymore. I don't think they signed him back. They franchise tagged Moton this year, but this is a work in progress. This is a line that I think they're very, very far away. But when we talk about Christian McCaffrey, he's never really had a terrific offensive line. He's just one of those players that can make things happen.
You are so right about that. And so now that leads us perfectly into our Christian McCaffrey talk. And as fantasy managers have come to know, he produces regardless of situation. As you astutely point out, poor offensive line play, no problem. He can make it happen as a runner, as a receiver. And if, again, they get some good play out of Darnold, it even opens things up more for McCaffrey, because right now, as things go, defenses are going to play with a base unit. They're not going to go in nickel and dime automatically. They don't fear the passing attack as teams didn't fear it last year. And so McCaffrey is still looking at seeing standard to heavier boxes. However, we're going to learn early in the season, but I think there's no situation in which Christian McCaffrey should not be considered again, as always, at pick number one. Is there any case to not take him number one, Anthony?
No, and 9 times out of 10, I'm taking Christian McCaffrey, unless I'm doing 10 different tournament leagues, and I want a little bit of a variance if I'm picking at the 101, but it's always, always, always Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, absolutely correct there. Yeah, so you're at best ball, spread it out. Absolutely, you're doing a team stack thing. Right, then you may vary off it if you have a multiple number one picks. So, yeah, absolutely like that there. And I don't think we've had too much time on Christian McCaffrey. Now, the tight ends basically were not used there last year. Ian Thomas had showed so well as a rookie, and I really thought they would make great use of him. He was the only big body they had, and I thought he would be a red zone presence. And he ran a good number of routes, but he was a complete non-factor. Rarely saw targets. Down the stretch, he saw a few. And then they bring in Dan Arnold this year. And Dan Arnold had a couple of long catches late in the season to make his numbers look reasonable. I don't know how consistent he's going to be. I definitely don't have him as a player who I'm going to look at for fantasy drafts, even in two tight end leagues. Any comments there?
No, and I like Dan Arnold, but I think I fell in love with the fact that he's a converted wide receiver. And this was going back with the Saints, where he would flash there. He would flash a little bit in Arizona, but he would never put it all together. So is it a system thing with the Cardinals, or is Dan Arnold just a regular guy? You put him now with the Panthers, who have questionable tight end use anyway. But here's something that interests me. The report on Zach Ertz being linked to the Panthers, does that mean that they want a tight end that they believe could be productive in this offense? And if they're in the Zach Ertz market, maybe they do want to use the tight end a little bit more. And in that case, I would be a little bit interested in Dan Arnold, but only as like a number two guy. Like, he's not somebody where if I'm going to punt tight end until the end of the draft, he's not going to be the only guy I'm relying on. I would take somebody, and then as an insurance policy, or just in case he pops, Dan Arnold second.
Now, one last thing I want to cover on them before we move on. Last year, the coaching staff, it was mixed as to how they used motion. Basically, they used a fifth least play action, which was not good for Teddy Bridgewater. He could have utilized that, but because of largely Curtis Samuel, they used the eighth most pre-snap motion. I think if they continue to ignore play action, now McCaffrey wasn't around most of the season, but if they ignore that, I think that hurts the potential of Sam Darnold. He is going to need defensive players frozen on occasion to give him more advantageous looks. So I think they really need to address that. Now, I'm concerned that the pre-snap motion goes away a bit, because I think that was a big function of Curtis Samuel. But if they were going to use it properly, again, back to DJ Moore. He is the player you'd like to use in pre-snap motion, because you could involve him in jet sweeps. You could involve him in screens off of that, but also having the defense dictate their look. So I just wanted to add that as well. Any final comments here, Anthony?
No, I think we can move off to the next team.
Yeah, we'll move on to the New Orleans Saints. And wow, this is going to be an interesting quarterback battle we're going to have through the season. The one thing that's great about the Saints is their offensive line graded out of the 97th percentile. They have been a solid unit for years, and they continue to have that look of being an outstanding unit. Now, at center, The one person I believe is not a holdover, Eric McCoy. Otherwise, they got Cesar Ruiz, who they drafted to be a center at right guard, Ryan Ramczyk at right tackle. The left side is outstanding. Teron Armstead at left tackle, Andres Pete at left guard. The line will continue to be a cornerstone of this franchise. And one thing I thought was very interesting was the pass rate for the Saints, 28th in the league last year. So they threw the fifth fewest pass rate at 51.3%. So they were running almost 49% of the time. And I think certainly that was a function of Drew Brees being at the end of the rope. But I don't think, regardless of whether Winston or Hiller are quarterback, I don't think that's going to change. What are your thoughts on the offensive approaches? Does they run heavy, Anthony?
I believe the Saints are going to continue to be run heavy. Yesterday's show with Mike Hoff, we talked about the rumor of the Saints using both Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray, especially early in the season. And we got into a little debate about the quarterback situation and how this is telling me and why I believe Taysom Hill will be the guys, because we know that the Saints have won games with Taysom Hill, and we see the formula in two out of the three wins last year, because they went 3-1, I believe, with Taysom Hill. In two of the three wins, we saw Taysom Hill, Alvin Kamara, and Latavius Murray have all double-digit carries, and that's their formula to winning football games without Drew Brees. Run the football, control the tempo of the game, and they still have a pretty good defense. I'm not going to say the defense is the same that it was 2 years ago or during that stretch without Brees last year, but that's how you're going to win games in New Orleans. I am not a believer in Jameis Winston. I haven't seen enough. What I saw in Tampa Bay wasn't good. He has even less weapons to work with. When you're Jameis in Tampa, at one point you had Rashad Perriman and Mike Evans and O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, and the list goes on of talent. And now what do you have in New Orleans, really? You have Alvin Kamara, you have Michael Thomas, and that's all we know.
You are so right about that. Now, when we talked about the running game, I want to back up your point further. They currently have two fullbacks on the roster, five tight ends on the roster, and that's not an atypical number. But that could indicate their willingness to go with even heavier personnel than usual. To maximize their quarterback position, they're going to need to see heavier boxes, lighter secondaries. And the way to do that is use your great offensive line, get a fullback or extra tight end in there, and continue to dictate that way, utilize play action. And we know that Sean Payton, when he needs to use play action, he absolutely will do that. Now, last year, it was very disappointing. He used the seventh least amount of play action. And that just seems counter to what we would see from Sean Payton offenses. And my guess is he's going to realize, as he looks back at the season, to give his new quarterbacks an opportunity, he's going to have to up that. He was only 18th in pre-snap motion as well, so he wasn't really doing his quarterbacks a lot of favors. So that's going to be interesting. Now to the quarterback position. Jameis Winston, downfield arm, questionable decision-making. Taysom Hill, not sure what he is as a passer, certainly has mobility, can do a lot of things. What are your thoughts? How are you approaching this in fantasy drafts?
With Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston, they're both going at a pretty reasonable ADP. So it's more about who do I believe in and what am I looking for? I'm not taking either one in single quarterback leagues. There's just no trust there. There's so much depth at this position. But in a two quarterback league even, I'm getting these guys as my QB3 9 times out of 10, and 10 times out of 10, I am taking Taysom Hill. Again, we know that if Jameis Winston's the week one starter, maybe they give him a month and he doesn't look good, they're going to put in Taysom Hill, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Taysom Hill is involved each and every week in some capacity, and then we know what he can do with his rushing floor, and oh, by the way, he can catch passes too.
You know, when you mention that, it makes Jameis Winston a player, even in best ball leagues, a player I may not want to touch in any shape or form, because if Taysom Hill comes in certain packages, and those packages are where are probably going to be in the red zone, because that's where you can't make mistakes, and that's the time Winston may be off the field. Mm-hmm. So if Taysom Hill is taking any percentage of red zone opportunities, and we just said it, this team had the 28th pass rate in the league, 51%. If they're not going to be throwing that often, and if Taysom Hill is going to get some reps, meaningful reps, Jameis Winston, again, even in best ball leagues, I can't even consider grabbing him other than an emergency third quarterback, but I would probably go elsewhere, almost anywhere. Taysom Hill, as you said, interesting, decent best ball pick. In season-long leagues, single quarterback, probably can't touch him there unless he's confirmed as a starter, because he's very risky. We know this, and we've talked about this, Anthony. Any quarterback who can run has serious fantasy value. So at any point, if Taysom Hill is the starter, he's a top, he's a QB1, because he's going to run for 40-plus yards in many weeks, and that puts you right there. Jalen Hurts, we talked about him a couple right. weeks ago, that he is somebody you definitely look at. We go back to Tim Tebow. I mention it all the time. Tim Tebow was a QB1, and he couldn't even throw the football. So I think we're good on those two. At running back, when Taysom Hill came in, aside from one game, Alvin Kamara was not seeing many targets. The targets weren't very efficient, and he goes from seeing targets in one of the best screen game quarterbacks of our lifetime in Drew Brees to Taysom Hill. Jameis Winston doesn't seem to be the guy who's going to dump off much. He's looking downfield more. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Alvin Kamara in PPR leagues?
Listen, Alvin Kamara was a player, I believe up until last year, he had eight straight seasons with 80-plus catches. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he hit that last year. And a lot of it is because of the way the offense is shifting. And we know that Alvin Kamara isn't the best in-between-the-tackles runner. He might be the best pure running back on the team in terms of all-purpose. But there's a guy named Latavius Murray who's not too bad anytime he gets the opportunity to start or be the featured guy. We see Latavius Murray finish as an RB1 or a fringe RB1 a lot. I think this is going to be a true two-headed monster. Sure, yeah, you treat Alvin Kamara as you would normally treat Alvin Kamara as a top five fantasy running back, but I'm not sure I can justify taking him ahead of Saquon Barkley or Dalvin Cook or Christian McCaffrey right now.
Yes, I have moved Alvin Kamara down on my draft board. I have him all the way down at RB9 in PPR leagues. I just do not feel the thing that he does best will be maximized. If he's going to be a runner, he gets his 15 carries, and he is explosive. I get that. But the more he gets put in that role, the more potential he has to get hurt. Now, his receptions, this is interesting. You're going to find this interesting. In his first three seasons, he had 81 receptions. He had 83 last year. He actually had his second highest receiving total. He had 826 in his rookie year. He had 756 last year. And he tied his receiving touchdown total with five. Now, that was on the back of Drew Brees early in the season, completely peppering him with targets. We had in week three, we had a 13 catch, 139 and two touchdown game against Chicago in week eight. He had a 9 for 96 and he had a 783 and a touchdown against the 49ers. So, and a 9 for 95 against the Raiders. So understand those numbers were primarily put up with Brees because when we look late in the season, he did not exceed 44 receiving yards in any game after week 10.
I believe he blanked for the first time in his career.
He did in week 11 against Atlanta. And the next week he had a catch for minus 2 yards. So, and he had a 9-yard game and a 17-yard game. So look, when you're telling me with those other quarterbacks, if he is only going to get basically 100 yards receiving in six games, and he had one touchdown during that time, dude, he's my RB9, and I'm not even excited about him at that point. Because as a runner, you know, like I said, there are weeks he gets stopped up. He had, until that Minnesota game where he went ballistic, 88 yards was his high watermark on the ground. But we know he does it through the air. But if that is cut off, I'm very concerned. So I think you know, running back 8, running back 9, fine. It's fine there. I mean, no, he'll be long gone. I'll never get him in a draft, you know, ranking him there, and that's fine. But
when you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, if they don't fix the receiving chops with the quarterbacks, that's going to be problematic. And I think you agree with that. No need to add on that?
No, I don't. I do agree with that.
Yeah. So I want to add to your thoughts. I loved what you said about Latavius Murray. Latavius Murray, we know he's a backup. We get that. I think he could see more work this year. As Sean Payton is crafting his offense for the season with Drew Brees out of the picture, with, as we've said multiple times, they're running the ball 49% of the time. He never really likes to give Kamara a lot of touches. He only had 2 games. Before that Week 16 game against Minnesota, he had 2 games with over 13 carries, over 14 carries, I'm sorry. So it's basically it's 11, 12 carries a game. That's what he gets. Murray's going to have a role. And behind that devastating offensive line with heavy personnel sets, I think you're drafting Murray as a flex. If Kamara gets hurt, as you said, he's had QB, I mean, he had RB1 weeks. That's going to happen. That is going to happen behind that line. He is getting a little bit older. Murray, I don't have it in front of me. I believe he'll be 32 this season. I don't have it in front of me. He's close either way. But he hasn't had a lot of volume in his career. So I'm not worried about that.
No, he had.
Where would you draft him?
Well, Latavius Murray last year had 5 games in which he went over double-digit PPR points. And then even going back to 2019, he had 6 games in the double digits. And combined in those 2 seasons, he had 4 games over 20. 2 last year going over 20 PPR points. And then 2 in 2019 in which he went over 30. So for Latavius Murray, a player that could get more carries, I wouldn't mind drafting him in the he's not going to be there in a 10th round, but would I take a shot on Latavius Murray right around like the 8th or 9th round if we truly believe the Saints are going to shift their offense? Absolutely.
Yeah, and in salary cap leagues where you're bidding on players and things like that, that, you know, it's not a bad player to get on the cheap as well. Absolutely with that. So, yeah, I think Latavius Murray is a player. Keep your eye on. If he falls, and there are drafts, he will fall beyond where Anthony and I are talking about. And that's good fantasy players. You're always keeping an eye on, you know, when a player is still available. And if you get to that double-digit round idea, you know, you need some depth at running back, and he is still there. It's very important to consider a player like him. Now we go to receiver. So Michael Thomas, he's having the career. You know, he's having the great career. And then last year comes along. Not too exciting last year. Well, the concern here is Taysom Hill peppered him with targets. That worked out really well. Jameis Winston, and I was just reading this recently. Jameis Winston on slant routes has gotten worse over the course of his career when he was playing. Last year, obviously, is not a factor. Michael Thomas lives on the slant. That's his go-to route where he's most effective. If Winston's the quarterback, that's problematic. So betting on Michael Thomas is a bet probably on Taysom Hill being a quarterback. People say Ryan Fitzpatrick has made fantasy players. I'm sorry, I screwed that up. Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston has gotten some production out of players, but it's been a lot of downfield throwing. What are your concerns with Michael Thomas in the situation of uncertainty at quarterback?
I have a lot of concerns about Michael Thomas in general. In fact, I was never a big Michael Thomas guy. The one big year where he popped, he was spoon-fed targets. And really, he's the only true receiver they have there. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders was there. That's nice, but not the same Emmanuel Sanders in the past. I can't believe in my mind. I see on fantasy Twitter, people still think Traquan Smith is going to be something. They just have a bunch of guys behind Michael Thomas. And you talk about, I forgot whose measurables it was, it was Davante Adams. Like Michael Thomas, the eye test, he doesn't impress me. So if I take all that into consideration, he's always overdrafted. And now that there's no Drew Brees and there is going to be a clear regression in targets, I am completely out on Michael Thomas. I don't know how many shares of Michael Thomas I'm going to have at all.
Yeah, and I'm very unlikely to have him. I have other wide receivers. I'm way more bullish on Terry McLaurin. I would rather have Allen Robinson over him, which means at the point in drafts where he's going to go, there's no chance for me to get him. Now, we mentioned Traquan Smith. Traquan Smith has been in a bad situation. He's more of a downfield guy, and the problem was Drew Brees was his quarterback, so Traquan Smith becomes a member of the Saints at the time when he has a quarterback with a pop gun for an arm. So I think we don't know what Traquan Smith is. He's a big guy, and we saw him play in the slot last year, but again, the quarterback play was just brutal. And so, look, the one person who knows what he is Sean Payton. And if Sean Payton believes that Smith is the player who he thought he drafted, the possibility would have to, again, depend on quarterback play. If Winston's the quarterback, if he goes back to using Smith out, Traquan Smith out of the slot on the outside as a downfield threat, he then has value. I don't know that Traquan Smith has any value should Taysom Hill be a quarterback. So to go along with what you're saying, Anthony, it's very difficult to draft Traquan Smith because there is a lot of concern there. And again, a run-heavy offense. The last player on the receiver position, I do want to touch on. We only saw a little bit of him last year. But what I saw, Marquez Callaway has good size. He had some separation skills, and he definitely showed some early production in his opportunities. He's still mostly an unknown. We have a run-heavy offense. But if Traquan Smith is used in the slot where he was last year, Callaway could be a starting outside receiver. Any reason to take a late dart throw on Callaway in drafts?
It all depends on what's around him. I'm very down on the Saints. This is a rebuild year, whether they want to think so or not. So many questions at the quarterback position. This is one of those offenses, despite the price, I'd rather go take a shot, and I've seen their names very close. I'd rather take a shot on Sammy Watkins in Baltimore.
You love you some Sammy Watkins, don't you?
Well, I mean, at least we know what he can do in that system.
I tell you what, though, if there's a place that's going to have less passes thrown than New Orleans, I think it's going to be Baltimore. But I get what you're saying.
I like the quarterback more.
Yeah, no question. Right, the quarterback situation is very, very poor here. Now, I will go back to Callaway. My final thought is this, and if you're picking in a best ball league, and Callaway's not getting drafted in most leagues. He has been overlooked for the most part. In the latter rounds of those drafts, from what we saw last year in limited action, I do believe his game translates. I do believe he can see some targets. Traquan Smith could be in the way. But I do think having a little bit of exposure to Marquez Callaway in your portfolio of drafts, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. That's kind of all I'm going with that. Again, I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar this year, but I'm saying there are some scenarios where he could be useful for you. Leaves us at one player, Anthony, Adam Trautman. So, obviously, a high draft pick. The Saints thought a lot of him. Jared Cook is now gone. Trautman comes in and takes over. Do you have any initial expectations for Adam Trautman in this run-heavy Saints offense?
Adam Trautman is a guy that we absolutely know nothing about. He was a third-round pick, I believe, back in 2020. Solid athlete. No more Jared Cook. But when Drew Brees was gone, that tight end position, and if I remember correctly, was non-existent. It was just as bad as we saw out of Carolina. So I have no reason to buy into Adam Trautman in a single standard redraft league. I don't even know how much of Adam Trautman I'm getting in best ball tournaments. There is better value to be had, like a Cole Kmet or Zach Ertz, who is I'm getting Zach Ertz in the 16th, 17th, 18th round as a Mr. Irrelevant in these underdog best ball drafts.
Yeah, and I'm just going to make my comments on Adam Trautman and we'll move on here. So as a talent, I think he can become something. But given the quarterback situation here, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum. I don't buy Jameis Winston locking in on Trautman for targets. Taysom Hill, again, few design plays at a tight end. Otherwise, I think he looks to take off and run way too much. And I don't think there are going to be high volume targets there. So I think based on those factors, nothing about Trautman's ability, I just think he's not in a place in the offense where he's going to see a lot of work. Well, that's going to bring us to one more. We'll run a little bit over time here tonight. I think Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and what more do we say? How often do we ever hear a Super Bowl winning team brings back everyone? What did you think about that, Anthony?
Unprecedented, something that we've never seen before, but it's like Tom Brady, right? That's what happens with Tom Brady. And when it was New England, it was the Bill Belichick thing to do. It's really the Tom Brady thing to do, because that's where it starts. It starts with Tom Brady's leadership and taking pay cuts and doing what's best for the team. I believe Mike Evans may have taken another pay cut. And this was a guy, Mike Evans, this isn't the first time he's taken less money to get other guys paid. I know he's done it earlier in his career. They got Godwin. And to me, getting Chris Godwin on a one-year franchise tag, that's a pretty good deal for what he could have commanded on the open market. And I think the players around Tampa Bay, especially those guys who've been there all these years, they know what it's like to win now. They like the culture. Football is fun for these guys. So you know what? Yeah, we'll take a little bit less, because what if we win another Super Bowl? Then what are we going to go get paid? So I think it was a smart decision to take less this year, because eventually they're going to go get paid, and probably as soon as 2022 if Tampa repeats.
Yes. Now, the one position that doesn't get talked about a lot in Tampa Bay, but it was massive, was their offensive line play. Sports Info Solutions had them as an 80th percentile line. And so they have Ali Marpet and Alex Kappa at guard, and they are phenomenal. They're great in the run game, especially. Marpet is nasty. He's absolutely nasty, a wonderful player to have. But the first round draft pick, Tristan Wirfs at right tackle, he has yet to come close to tapping his potential. He is going to improve most likely this year. And this line has an upward trajectory. Left tackle Donovan Smith, more than fine. Ryan Jensen at center, he's nastier than both of the guards. He's the guy that ticks off the defensive players and gets them in fights. And I remember there was talk before the Super Bowl that there would be a personal foul against somebody on Kansas City dealing with him. And sure enough, I don't remember who it was, there was. He pissed somebody off so bad, threw it a 15-yard flag against the defense. It was great. But this line returns, and that is really the straw that's going to, you know, set the drink up here for us. Tom Brady, 96th percentile quarterback play, and he did not start off the season great. He was learning the playbook. It was clear that Tom Brady grew into this position and took more a hold of the offense as the season went on. without talking about the other skill position players, what are you expecting from Brady at year two of Tampa with all these players back?
I was extremely high on Tom Brady last year. I'm a Tom Brady guy to begin with. And I think I had him as a top seven quarterback or even possibly top six, and people thought I was nuts. But this is the most talent Tom Brady has ever had around him. We'd have to go back to those Randy Moss teams, let's say. And last year, Tom Brady, only number nine in fantasy points per game, which is still quarterback one, and he had those big pop games. And some games we saw Brady struggle. There's not going to be too many games this year now that he has a full grasp of the system, and you brought that there had to be some adjustments in growing. I think there was adjustments by Tom Brady and by Bruce Arians to say, okay, let's meet in the middle. And once we saw that, remember, they had a late week 13 bye, and then they came out of that bye, and they were unstoppable. They might have even ran the table. So I like Tom Brady a lot in fantasy for his ADP. He's a big-time value. You can get Brady, right around 7th or 8th round. And if you can build your team and then go get a guy like Tom Brady who is – you know, I can realistically see him moving up to maybe as a top six fantasy quarterback. You're in pretty good shape. And you mentioned weapons. They have even more weapons, because what people are missing is the fact that they're getting O.J. Howard back. They brought in Gio Bernard, one of the premier pass catching and pass blocking backs in the league. So they're fully loaded, and I don't see any way Tampa isn't a juggernaut on offense, and I don't see any way why they shouldn't repeat as Super Bowl champions.
No, I love that. And, you mentioned Howard coming back. We should even – and we're not going to talk about these players specifically now. We'll come to them with the receivers. But Brown only had a half a season with them. Scotty Miller's growing. Tyler Johnson was a rookie.
I love Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, these players are getting better. And so you're right, 100%. It's a better cast because of that. And again, as you mentioned, just the chemistry. Last thing on Brady, through week 9, he had two games with one touchdown, and he had a zero touchdown game. Once week 10 hit, he had multiple touchdowns in every game. And then we start in week 16, 4-4, 2-2, 3-3, and that goes through the Super Bowl. But he ramped it up as the season went on. So I'm not going to add anything more on Tom Brady than you did. Certainly could get him as a top 9 quarterback. He could finish as a top 6 quarterback, and no issues with that. Now, the running game is going to drive fantasy managers nuts here, because between Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, maybe Gio Bernard, maybe Keyshawn Vaughn, CJ Prosise sitting 6th on the depth chart, what do you do as a fantasy manager with this grouping of running backs?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm a Leonard Fournette guy. I've always been a Leonard Fournette guy, and the best Leonard Fournette that we've seen in a very, very long time was that postseason run. And I believe we're going to see almost that hot hand approach again, because remember, in the regular season, it was heavily dominated by Ronald Jones. But as soon as Ronald Jones would have a mental mishap, whether he fumbled or he missed a pass blocking assignment, Leonard Fournette would step in, and we would see him have a nice little bit of a game run, maybe a 2-game run. I can see Leonard Fournette opening the year as the running back, but am I going to draft him, assuming he's going to be the guy there all year? No, because of Ronald Jones. They're going to cannibalize each other. So Tampa Bay running backs, unless I'm getting them at immense value in traditional leagues, I'm only touching them in best ball.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's right in redraft leagues, it's very difficult to go after Fournette or Jones, because there's weekly zeros there potentially, not necessarily, but really low scores. You got to be concerned about that. Look, I'm not a big Gio Bernard guy here, but I have to make a comment here because Leonard Fournette was the receiving back. He had a 12.8% drop rate, 10th percentile. Tom Brady, you could see the frustration when he would dump to his running backs and it was going nowhere. Jones was inefficient as a receiver. Fournette was inefficient as a receiver, and I get it. He did decently in the playoffs. You bring in Gio Bernard. Look, he showed last year down the stretch playing with no quarterback. He had a couple functional games. He crushed the Steelers. He could become James White for them. Look, Gio Bernard's a better talent than James White. A million times better talent than James White, right? And it won't take Tom Brady long to meld with a veteran in the screen game. I could definitely see a path, especially if Jones or Fournette drop anything early, that Bernard could come in and have significant receiving numbers. And I think he's a great lottery ticket in best ball leagues.
Yeah, I'm into the Gio Bernard edition. I love the comp to James White. There's just so much here. Like, they also brought in Troymaine Pope, who's another pass-catching type back. That's the role they're looking for. And there was a recent report saying that Keyshawn Vaughn didn't show up to I guess he didn't show up to an activity. And Bruce Arians says, I hope he makes a better decision. I mean, all of these running backs we're talking about, with the exception of Keyshawn Vaughn, are on one-year deals. If you're Keyshawn Vaughn, wouldn't you be busting your ass right now getting that job for next season?
You are so right. But how many players do we see come in the league, they think they're this or that, and it takes them years? I mean, Devontae Parker, think of a guy like that. Think of Ronald Jones even in his first year. I mean, just didn't get it. And, like, you know, you're kind of intimating here, the fact that the coach called out Keyshawn Vaughn, that's not good. What I like as well that you mentioned, look, they added four receiving backs. I mean, Vaughn was on the roster, but they added three. Bernard, Pope, as you said, and Procise. So we all the time say this. What an organization does with their roster tells you what they think about their current roster. When you're adding four receiving backs, that's a very clear statement that they want somebody to emerge as that option. And honestly, Gio Bernard is an excellent veteran, understands pass pro, even though he's a small guy, very cognizant of pass routes that are not designed on the fly. He has to be a natural fit here. Am I guaranteeing he's James White? No. There are a lot of scenarios. Gio Bernard should easily beat the competition at that position because of his reliability. At this stage, they don't want to develop a player in a Super Bowl window. They want a player you could put in, give Brady what he needs, reliable hands, a great outlet, and feel for the pass pro and the play. I think he does emerge into something.
Jim, is it the Patriot way or is it the Brady way? And to me, that's the age old question.
I think they kind of became synonymous. I think that with Brady growing, and in a way, Belichick was growing as a head coach. He had that failed stint in Cleveland, and you know, and I think when they both were becoming great. Both becoming legendary at the same time. And I really think they both brought out the best at each other. But then Brady probably learned so much from Belichick. Now he leaves Belichick. He brings the best of Tom Brady. But does he bring the best of Bill Belichick with him as well? What do you think? I mean, because think about it. He's a cerebral dude, man. And he learned from the master. So It may just be that. And of course, Belichick doesn't have the same luxury. He can't bring the best of Brady because Brady needs to be on the field.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And I know everybody wants to say, well, Tom's having more fun. Yeah, maybe in front of the cameras, but when it's time to go to work, Tom Brady is very much that same Patriot Tom Brady.
Exactly. So at the receiver position, look, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, both pretty much third round picks in fantasy drafts, no longer going in the second round. You get them in the third. You might get them at the turn. That might be in maybe the second round to third round turn. They may be there. You kind of know what you have. Evans has some down games because of volume. There are times he doesn't get targets. He bails us out with a touchdown now and again. He puts up his share of 100-yard games. He's going to post touchdown numbers. Chris Godwin, well, let's stop on Evans. Is there anything other than the obvious Evans is just kind of fits at his ADP?
I like Evans where you can get him, and I think he's a lot better of a player than he gets credit for in a fantasy football space. But when it's a completely different story now without Jameis Winston, the defense is better, and yes, there's going to be volume, but a lot of what Mike Evans did last year, especially early, I think he had like five or six touchdowns, fewer than 5 yards last year. He was essentially their tight end and goal line back.
You know what? He certainly was. Yeah, that's a great call. They definitely use him that way. While we're talking about the receivers here, I want to add a couple of numbers to help fantasy managers here. So the bad news was the Bucs were only 23rd in offensive plays per game at 63.6. Now, that's pretty middle of the road, actually. 23rd, but it's near the middle. But the good news was their pass rate. They were the third highest pass rate in the league. They were thrown 62.9% of the time, and I think that was great. And although they didn't use play action much at all, they were 30th, they used pre-snap motion the ninth most. So Bruce Arians was really helping Brady by ramping up the pass rate, using some pre-snap motion, and so that was a real positive. But as you said, Mike Evans, I have nothing more to add on him. Chris Godwin's the next one we go to. And as the season went on, Godwin began to see his targets elevate down the stretch, and that was huge because he was really hit or miss earlier in the season, and he was dinged a little bit as well. There were games he was not playing at full capacity. He had four did-not plays between week one and eight, and so he was, you know, when he was on the field, he wasn't 100%, misses week two, four and five, and week eight. And then we finally get down the stretch. And here's let me get the target count here. So here are his targets from week 16 through the playoffs. 9, 7, 12, 7, 9, 4 in the Super Bowl because it was a blowout win. He would have had easily that same level of targets. And I think fantasy managers need to look at those numbers because before then, he was getting about 6 or 7 targets. His targets were going in the 7 to 9 range. And I think he finally became the slot presence that Tom Brady has always utilized and will continue to utilize. And I think Chris Godwin, 2 years ago, an abject steal. Last year, drafted too high. This year, in the third round, I think he gets you second round numbers because I expect him to continue his late season success. Thoughts on him?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of injuries with Chris Godwin. It never seemed like he was fully healthy. Now, if we talk about Mike Evans, he finished right around the wide receiver 15 or 16, I'm pulling it up now, in fantasy points per game. And this is Mike Evans, who pretty much played a full year. I'm waiting for this to pull up here at PPR. So he was 16th at 15.4 fantasy points per game. Albeit in a handful of less games, Chris Godwin finished 15th with 15.9. Where did it come from? I don't have a clue. Because I had Chris Godwin on a lot of teams, and when you look and you say he was a wide receiver 15 and what?
Yep.
But this is the magic of a talent like a Chris Godwin, arguably, maybe not arguably, the most talented and most athletic slot receiver Tom Brady has ever had. And if we can get Chris Godwin healthy for a full 16, I think he can have a monster year. And again, you said you get him in a third round. That's pretty good value. And I think he also brings a higher floor than a Mike Evans.
Yeah, absolutely agree on that. And you mentioned this very astutely. Look, Tom Brady made Wes Welker a superstar. He made Julian Edelman a superstar. And as you mentioned, those players had nowhere near the athletic ability of Chris Godwin. Mm-hmm. Now, they all had agility. But where Godwin blows them away is he's actually fast and he's actually explosive. Whereas we know that Welker and Edelman were just agility guys, which is great. That's what Brady needed. But this is the total package. And so, yes, I think that you will get a high second round value. You could get a top five receiver in PPR leagues with Chris Godwin in that Brady piloted offense. We're getting on time here, so we're going to finish up here. Let's talk about a little bit more here. Antonio Brown, I'll make a quick note on him. So after when he comes in week 14 and after the bye, yardage, 49. And a touchdown. You know what? For a guy coming off the street midseason, those are pretty solid numbers down the stretch of the season. What are you looking for from Antonio Brown this year?
But you could get Antonio Brown for free. We know what he can bring in a three-man wide receiver group. And let's say if you want to rope in the running backs and Gronkowski, but really he's the wide receiver three. But what we also know that Mike Evans gets banged up. Chris Godwin gets banged up. Scotty Miller gets banged up, and there are going to be those opportunities for Antonio Brown, who is Tom Brady's guy, to give you those big monster games. And for where we can draft Antonio Brown, he's a player that I'm targeting to the late single-digit rounds, and if you got lucky and get him into the double digits, I'd be all over him. Especially yes. Because people, anytime they see a legal issue, even though the last one was more or less nothing, the ADP falls. People get scared. Take advantage of that.
Absolutely correct. Yes. So I agree with that. If I am definitely looking to get some Antonio Brown, and think about this, fantasy managers, if Evans or Godwin go down for any period of time, he walks in the heavy target share. Mm. And he could really be a player who could elevate your fantasy team, especially in best ball leagues. So definitely keep an eye on him. And at tight end, look, Rob Gronkowski last year, I was excited about him, but he really wasn't playing much early in the season. I mean, the first four games of the season, 11 yards, 0, 48, and 29, no touchdowns, didn't look good. He was coming back from a year off. He had lost so much weight as a former player. I think, yes, he's going to be 32. He's not old. We think he's way older than that, but he's not. And
talking about Gronk?
Gronk, yes.
Delanie Walker's trying to come back, and he's 37 this year.
Right, exactly. Yes. I think what we saw from Gronk last year was a player who is coming back from a long layoff. I think we could see a decent version of Gronk this season. Mm-hmm. I got him as the tight end 20. In a best ball league, tight end 20.
Wow.
You know what? There are not many good tight ends outside of the top five or six usually in a season. Gronk is a low-end tight end one, absolutely, because he is going to be in better shape this year. He didn't take a beating last year. Brady still looks to him in critical situations. I know O.J. Howard's there. I know Cam Brate's there. But Gronk is Brady's guy. And I know that's narrative, but it's not just narrative. He knows where Gronk's going to be, when he's going to be there, and he knows he can trust him anytime he throws the ball. I think you can safely get Gronk at a discount as a low-end tight end one. Any thoughts on Gronk before we call it a day?
Absolutely. I'm into Gronk. I don't know how much I'm going to have of Gronk, but when you're selling him to me as a low-end tight end one, and I think about guys like a Noah Fant that I can have right around there. We don't know where Hayden Hurst is going to fall. We can take flyers on Blake Jarwin. We at least know, again, what do we know from this? The rapport between Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, and they are going to have those runs of red zone use. So I would not mind getting my hands on a few shares of Gronk.
Absolutely. So fantasy managers, we hope you enjoyed this segment on the NFC South. Keep saying AFC. Next week, we're looking to start getting to the NFC West. Mm. We're going to have a blast here. Anthony, why don't you tell everybody what you're up to these days?
Absolutely, Jim. Anthony Servino, follow me on Twitter at The Real NFL Guru. Follow the show at the FF Face Off. We have a lot going on with the website. I'm doing a lot of content over at the Game Day NFL and contributing just about anywhere I am asked to, because I can never stop. Football is an escape for me, and I absolutely love it. Jim, tell everybody what you're doing and take it home.
Yeah, so RotoWire just kind of gave me the update, so I will be back on SiriusXM on Saturdays and Sundays.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited, very grateful, very grateful. Work for a great team, and they take good care of me. They treated me well, so I appreciate RotoWire a great bit. And then they also gave me word today, I'm back in as IDP guy, which is fun. Ton of work. I love it. But man, it's a lot of work, which is fine. You know, it's what we do. So yeah, back as the IDP guy as well, which is fine. I'm going to enjoy that. I will start the Sirius stuff up later this month. So we're only a few weeks away from that kicking off. So just excited there. But everybody, Anthony and I appreciate your time. Look, you've got a lot of things you could be doing. You spent your time with us. It's valuable to you. So thank you. We will look forward to seeing you next Wednesday. Anthony will see you much sooner than that. Everybody have a wonderful rest of your day.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.